This is the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com Radio.
Moran in the backfield off Brady's left hip. Amendola started in motion. Brady takes the snap. Rolls right, throws to the end zone. Catches Brady. Touchdown, Danny Amendola!
The Bob Soucy Show is your source for in-depth Patriots coverage and all things NFL. Join Bob for exclusive interviews, statistical breakdowns, and the best coverage of your New England Patriots.
Gostkowski trying to win it in overtime. The snap, the spot, the kick is airborne to the uprights, and the kick is a game winner!
Join the conversation by calling the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
Left foot forward for the quarterback, hands extend, takes the snap, retreats in the pocket, under a rush, throws across the middle, touchdown, Rob Gronkowski!
Now, here's your host, the radio voice of your New England Patriots, Bob Soucy.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to the show as we come to you live today from 4 to 6 every Wednesday from our Fresh Broadcast Studios, our Subway Fresh Broadcast Studios inside Gillette Stadium. Of course, this is our Week 4 edition of the Bob Soucy Show of the Patriots at 2-1, getting set to travel to Kansas City for a Monday night appearance against the Kansas City Chiefs. It will mark the fourth time all time that these two old AFL rivals will engage on the primetime stage under Monday Night Lights. And of course, the Chiefs are coming off a pretty resounding win in Miami. Kansas City beginning the season at 0-2 after last year's remarkable turnaround in year one under Andy Reid. Nonetheless, bouncing back from those first two season opening losses to rout the Dolphins last week in South Florida. Got a huge day from running back Nile Davis in for the injured Jamal Charles. Alex Smith with three touchdown passes, no interceptions. Again, managing the game very effectively for Andy Reid's Chiefs. And Kansas City puts up its first win. Whereas the Patriots, of course, earn their second win against the Oakland Raiders. Now at 2-1, the Patriots nonetheless still try to find their way, as we know, offensively, and so much of the chatter, so much of the words that have been written and spoken with regards to the Patriots in the wake of Sunday's victory over the Oakland Raiders has concern the offense, and in particular the offensive line, and we'll talk about that for sure today as we delve into the matchup looming for the Pats, and of course take a look back as well on the game Sunday afternoon with the Oakland Raiders. Interesting story this morning, by the way, in case you did not see it, perhaps if you're listening on distant shores or even in a different part of the country and haven't been able to log on and check out some of the Boston media today. The Boston Herald this morning, Karen Garrigian with a piece from today's paper and online at bostonherald.com, where she caught up with Dante Scarnecchia and asked the longtime Patriots offensive line coach about his thoughts. And he also did make it clear that he's very happy in retirement, so he's not going to get a call back and return to his old job for the Patriots, with Dave DeGuglielmo, of course, his successor in that role, trying to develop the offensive line into a cohesive unit. And according to Dante, that's exactly what they're trying to do right now. It's not an easy thing to do, as we all know and as the Patriots have learned, but he believes it will still happen if the Patriots are patient. And again, it's a matter of fitting the right pieces, and the Patriots try to do that and as well shore up the deficiency so far. But what we saw on Sunday against the Oakland Raiders was an offense that went 1-for-4 in the red zone. The Patriots, a couple of instances, had, if not a first and goal to go play from inside the five, then certainly we're knocking on the door. And again, it was a succession of Stephen Gostkowski field goals after the Rob Gronkowski touchdown catch that gave New England a 7-3 advantage in the second quarter of that contest. And a frustrating day, no doubt, for the Patriots themselves. That was very evident in the locker room afterwards, and certainly in the words of those players after Sunday's win over the Oakland Raiders, and evident as well for the fandom at Gillette Stadium. The Raiders, of course, nonetheless were held out of the end zone as well. The Patriots defense more than doing its part, off to a solid beginning in 2014. Vince Wilfork with that interception to seal it for New England, and the Pats now at 2-1, as you know. Kevin Collins has been around here for a long time, and as our producer, Kevin, you know, the expectations are always so high, and I think we all felt the frustration that certainly was verbalized by some of the players, and no one feels it more than they do, and certainly by most of the fans.
Yep.
The last few days in the wake of Sunday's win, but the Pats are 2-1, as they have reminded us as well. You know, no win is an easy win in the National Football League, but you've been around here a long time.
Yeah.
What's your sense right now? I mean, this is an experience that might seem new, and yet at the same time, almost a year ago, we were in the same situation where the Patriots had won over the Jets and the Buffalo Bills, and in fact were on their way to the 4-0 start before they lost in Cincinnati. And you know, we kind of felt the same thing about the offense in the early weeks of last year.
And if you recall that Cincinnati game, you know, they were held to, I think, I forget how many points. I think they held, got held
two
to
field goals.
Yeah, 6 points. I think that was pretty much it. And, of course, I, you know, one thing that pops out in that game is that vivid driving rainstorm at the end of that game, which also didn't help the offense. But we got a lot of the same, you know, type of comments out of Tom Brady, especially the Patriots Monday following that game, as we did this past Monday. He's definitely frustrated, and he did call out Julian Edelman by name and praised him as a guy that he is clicking with. But he went out of his way to mention that, you know, there are nine other guys, you know, on the field other than him and Edelman, and it's got to work for everybody, and that's something that we hope to see as we go along in the next couple of weeks. But, gee, I mean, normally, from, you know, this is my fifth season with the team, and I've watched a lot of games, and when you go into a game in years past, and if you were to tell me, Bob, you know, the Patriots are going to score 16 points, I wouldn't feel very good about it. But the one bright kind of shining star this year has been they've won ugly. I would say even the Minnesota game from an offensive standpoint in a lot of ways was ugly. And the defense and the special teams played a huge part in that victory. So you're seeing in the two victories that the Patriots have so far this year, them finding ways to win in different ways. They're not having – the offense isn't having to churn out 500 yards and score three or four touchdowns. You're seeing them win differently. And I'm a little bit of an optimist, and I think that bodes well for as the team starts to improve and come together and the offense starts to get some chemistry, including Gronk, who missed pretty much all of the preseason in terms of game action and was a non-contact type player. It's going to take a while. You just don't roll out of bed and have the offense fire on all cylinders when there's guys that miss so much time.
Yeah, and they are concerns with legitimate cause, and especially considering what's on the horizon. We talk about the Oakland Raiders. They've got a couple of guys in Lamar Woodley and Justin Tuck, for example, to go with a young kid like Khalil Mack, who's very impressive.
Yeah.
Those guys, Woodley and Tuck, they're north of their prime.
Yeah.
Those are guys that have been great pass rushers, or at least very good defensive players in the case of Woodley. And
caused
in the
issues
case of
for this team in the
past. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But now you're going up against a team in Kansas City that has a couple of guys in Tamba Ali, for example, and Justin Houston, who are also very dangerous. And they have a defensive coordinator in Bob Sutton, who can be very aggressive at times with his blitzes, in particular, as Brady recognized today, the inside blitzes. And then after that, with the Patriots coming off the Monday night game, it's a short week for them, going up against those same Cincinnati Bengals, or at least in large part the same Cincinnati Bengals, who a year ago held Tom Brady and the Patriots to 6 points, two field goals, and ended his streak of 52 consecutive games with touchdown passes, or at least one touchdown pass in 52 straight. That came to a close, as Kevin said, in that driving rainstorm in Cincinnati last year when Cincinnati Bengals held on with a late interception to prevail over the Patriots in a close game, and certainly the Bengals at 3-0 with a bye this week, playing as well as anyone in the AFC. But we're getting ahead of ourselves with that particular game, and no doubt the Patriots' focus all week long has been on trying to address some of those issues that continued to surface Sunday against Oakland while looking ahead and preparing for the schemes of Kansas City. And I think when you go back to the first game for the Patriots in Miami, and we saw the kind of effect that Cameron Wake had on the Patriots with his rushing from the edge, almost jumping the snap count, it seemed time and time again, getting off the ball and firing off the ball almost before it seemed to be snapped. The Patriots are not going to go into an environment where Ali is a guy who can be explosive like that, but also you're dealing with the noise on the road, and Arrowhead Stadium has been traditionally one of the loudest environments in the NFL, certainly louder than Sun Life Stadium in Miami. So that's something they got to work through. They got an offensive line that's still trying to come together. They're still trying to figure out the personnel, it certainly seems, again, as evidenced by that late insertion of Brian Stork at center last week and the removal of Jordan Devey from the lineup as Dan Conley switched back over from center to guard. And for the Patriots as well, you go into a foreign and hostile environment like in Kansas City, where the Pats have not played since 2005. And it's a lot of challenges that the Patriots offense is going to have to deal with. And, you know, I think when you look back at the Minnesota game, as Kevin referenced, the greatest frustration for me in watching that game was the inability to fully capitalize on the short fields. The Pats had a couple of short fields, and even in the Miami game, they had a short field starting a drive at the 45 and went only 1 yard, one net yard down three late in that game. And then in Minnesota, they had a couple of short fields and really could not fully capitalize. But I think last week they did try to come out and be a little bit more diverse offensively against Oakland. And, of course, they began with a 3-and-out, and the Raiders jumped to a 3-0 lead thereafter. And the Pats got the one touchdown, but that was it. They were able to move the ball thereafter, again, into the red zone several times, but had to settle for field goals. And I think the frustration last week also came with concern and the worries about that worst case scenario. What happens as this line tries to find its way and the Patriots try to shore up their blocking? What happens if Tom Brady takes too many punishing hits? And we saw Justin Tuck, for example, lay a couple of vicious hits into the Patriots quarterback last Sunday, including one in a goal-to-go situation. And then the Patriots, of course, had to hold on with their defense. The one thing about the defense, as we switch sides for a moment and think about the positive, is that, as Kevin said, they've been able to carry this team now to the two wins over Minnesota and the Oakland Raiders. They've been doing it by making plays, and that's one of the things that I think a lot of us were hoping to see and expected to see coming into this campaign. A defense which, even as recently as 2 years ago, could force takeaways. 2 years ago, the Patriots defense had 41 takeaways, whereas last year that number was down to 29. Last year, the opponents were on the field far too often after third down conversions. And I think the two areas that one looked for the Patriots to really change things this season after 2013 from a defensive point of view, at least in my opinion, would be, let's address the third down conversion rate, get off the field, get the opposing offense off the field, get the ball back to our offense, and secondly, along those lines as well, let's set up the offense in some short fields, and let's come away with some turnovers forced. And the Pats have been able to do that. 8 takeaways, tied for the league lead. They're right at the top, or right near the top, in second place in turnover margin. So that certainly bodes well for this team. And Kevin, as you said, you win games in different ways, mm-hmm. and certainly this team has been able to do that. I think Julian Edelman tried to say it the other day in the postgame comments: an ugly win is better than a pretty loss. And
yep.
May not give you too much encouragement or hope, but when you think about that possible worst case scenario, yeah. and going to Kansas City in particular in that environment against those pass rushers, but nonetheless, it's the truth. It's the reality of where the Patriots are right now.
Yeah, we all want to see them play well, and just hopping back quickly, Bob, to something you referenced, and the defense stepping up in Minnesota and creating those short fields, but the Patriots really, especially in the second half, only scoring 6 points, really not doing much with it. One thing that I'm looking for and that I want to see, as this team and this offense progresses is, Coach Belichick talks all the time about playing complementary football. And that would be, okay, when the defense does create that turnover and gives you the ball on, say, the plus 30-yard line, it's not, going 3-and-out and taking a field goal. It's really going down and making them pay and scoring a touchdown. And one of the things that I was waiting for in that Minnesota game was, okay, you come out of the half and you're up 24-7. And you get some good field position from some fortunate breaks that went your way. And I was waiting for that knockout punch, that one touchdown, to really put an exclamation point on the victory. And we never really saw it. And when you hop ahead to last week's game, I was looking for New England to do something that I had seen them do countless times before, Bob, when they scored the touchdown to go up 7-3 over Oakland. They're driving at the end of the first half. They get the ball first and goal with about 46 seconds left inside the 10-yard line. And I'm thinking, this is going to be one of those classic Patriot games where we see them score a touchdown at the end of the half and then take the opening kickoff in the second half.
And Scott Zolak and I were talking about it on a radio broadcast.
Yeah, and obviously I'm down on the field, and I'm thinking that, and you're up in the broadcast kind of articulating your thoughts.
Because the Patriots had gotten the 7-3 advantage.
Exactly.
They had the ball back.
They
were driving. Absolutely anything. Okay, opening kickoff of the third quarter. This is the chance to really break this game open.
Even if they go touchdown field goal even, and you push that to 17-3 at the very least, and potentially 21-3 if you score 2 touchdowns, you're thinking that's when Oakland starts to jingle the keys to the bus, and they're mentally kind
of checking out. It's a road weary team, second
yep.
East Coast
they're
game,
they're going
early
to London
game
after
in 3 weeks,
this.
Yeah.
Their coach is on the hot seat. That's when you could start to see a blowout ensue. And I was waiting for them to put the proverbial foot on the throat of the Raiders. That was their chance, and they kind of, not to quote Dennis Green, they kind of let them off the hook cheap a little, and they let them hang around. And all of a sudden, 45 minutes later, an hour later, we're in the fourth quarter with Oakland driving, down only a touchdown, and it took a great play by the defense to bail them out. But one thing I'm looking for in the Kansas City game in week 4 here and moving on is, like you mentioned, if the defense is going to be the quality of defense that's going to create these turnovers and be near the top of the league in creating takeaways,
it doesn't mean a heck of a lot if they're not turning them into points. And that's one thing that I want to see. The offense play complementary football to the defense and be able to have that instinct.
And again, I think, you know, that's all part of the frustration and why the reaction has been what it has been this last three or four-day stretch in the wake of the Oakland game. But as we know, this team has had the track record of eventually finding its stride, and certainly Bill Belichick and his staff have gone to work. They've had the extra day to prepare for Kansas City and also address some of those issues that needed fixing. And it all begins with the offensive line. No doubt about it, Tom Brady and the offense have not had time. People talk about ball distribution and trust of receivers or a lack thereof as perceived on the outside. But from this viewpoint, it all begins again with being able to protect the quarterback well enough where you can now enable him to take the deep drops and go through his progressions, and you can now go out there with a full complement of position groups and the full playbook at your disposal. You know, when you have an offensive line that has been struggling the way the Patriots have done, have been struggling, again, it's so difficult to do that, and Tom Brady has not had the time. As he said today in his press conference, the more time a quarterback has, the better decisions he makes. There simply has not been enough time for Tom Brady to throw the ball downfield, for this offense to really get on that kind of role that I think Kevin is describing that we've been accustomed to seeing in the past. And we will, of course, talk a little bit about that a bit later on. We're going to chat, hopefully, with James Devlin, the Patriots fullback / H-back / tight end, a guy who played defensive line in his collegiate career at Brown. Very bright guy, as you can presume from his Ivy League background, but also a very tough guy and someone who certainly tries to infuse a lot of energy in that offense. And no doubt about it, in the case of James Devlin, and the Patriots, it's something they're going to need. There's going to be a lot of emotion on Monday night in Kansas City. And this is a team that might also be lacking a little confidence up front. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of lineup they come up with, what kind of adjustments they make in terms of their blocking schemes, and as well what kind of offensive play calling we see early in that game against Kansas City, with the Patriots trying to turn things around offensively, get off to better starts, and develop some consistency as they move out of September and into October. A little later on as well, we'll chat with Mitch Holthus, who's the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs and has been for the last two decades plus. Howard Balzer, one of the original ESPN draft commentators and a longtime columnist back when the sporting news was the baseball Bible, but also a great source for national football news. And Howard Balzer out of St. Louis has been writing about and talking about the NFL for a long period of time on a number of outlets, including Sirius NFL and as well the Sports Exchange Network. And we'll also chat today with Scott Zolak, we hope, and Jackie Britton, my partner from Patriots.com. We encourage you to give us a call at 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500, or on our ACE ticket hotline at 508-298-0398, 508-298-0398. And, of course, you can email at webradio@patriots.com. And speaking of the email, before we look back again at the Oakland victory for the Pats last Sunday, got an email today. And it's regarding something that Kevin said about an ugly win. And in the NFL, this emailer says there's no such thing in the player's vocabulary, the NFL vocabulary. But yet Darrelle Revis, for example, after Sunday's game, did term that win somewhat ugly. And for the Patriots, nonetheless, a victory. It'll all look good in January if they're where they want to be and where people expect them to be. Pretty it was to watch in September when the Patriots beat the Oakland Raiders. But the other question that this emailer had, and I'll ask for your forgiveness for leaving out the emailer's name because I can't pronounce it. And one of the things that one learns over the course of a radio career is when someone has a tongue-twisting name, you got to find a quick nickname to insert. For example, Michael Ho'omanawanui. He's the Who Man. But in this case, our emailer wants to know about Ryan Wendell. When he comes back, assuming he comes back, what's the lineup and offensive line? And, you know, that is a great question, because certainly the Patriots have had issues even with their veteran tackles, when you're talking about Nate Solder and Sebastian Vollmer. But at least with a guy like Wendell, he's been there for every snap the last 2 years, along with Dan Connolly at guard. And it might be interesting to see if indeed the rookie Stork is able to ascend to that spot full time once Ryan comes back and is healthy. We're going to talk about the Patriots offense right now with a fullback slash H-back slash tight end, and a former defensive lineman during his collegiate career at Brown University. James Devlin is with us. And James, thanks for taking time.
No problem, man. Thank you.
You guys at work today in pads. You got an extra day to prepare for Kansas City. How are you trying to utilize that extra time to address, you know, what's taken place thus far, what needs to be addressed on the offensive side, but also preparing for Kansas City's schemes and personnel?
Yeah, I mean, we just took a good look at ourselves after the game against Oakland, and you know, we're just trying to kind of fix what we did wrong and improve on what we did right. And you know, Kansas City's got a very good squad. So they have a very explosive team, and so we're gonna just, you know, take the time to add extra hours of preparation this week for them.
As much as you guys try to ignore the noise, I mean, there's always a sense of panic almost around here because of the expectations and because of the success of the team. But do you feel that you guys are close to where you want to be, that it is a matter of technique and simply addressing certain things? And once you do that, that we won't see the 1-for-4 in the red zone, for example. We'll see this team stringing together touchdown drives and getting to the kind of offensive play that you want to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we're close. We just got to, you know, do all the right things. We have to have 11 guys doing the right thing on every play. You know, it comes down to just execution. And when we get out there, we just kind of have to eliminate our mistakes and just kind of keep building on what our strengths are and improving our weaknesses.
James, can you articulate, too, the difference for a player when you're involved? I mean, there might be a sense of frustration because you're not satisfied. You expect much of yourselves, and yet at the same time, you also appreciate a victory in the National Football League.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, the NFL, it's tough to get a win, you know, whoever you're playing against. And so you kind of have to take that for what it is, and then, you know, just constantly just grind, you know, grind and work on your craft and try to improve. And, you know, it's a process, but, you know, it's definitely, you know, worth it when you get that win.
James Devlin with us for the Patriots. Of course, the guy's had a variety of roles really evolving since your time with this team. It's been 2+ years now for you as a New England Patriot. And last year you had a chance to start, I believe, a half dozen games in the regular campaign, more of a fullback, occasionally an H-back. But this year we saw in the offseason you really expand your role to that of a tight end.
Yeah.
How do you describe, I mean, the progress you've made? I mean, to go from a guy who was a defensive lineman in college playing at the Ivy League level to now in the National Football League as a guy who potentially is a pass catcher, and you've been that a couple of times already in this regular season.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a process, and it's been a long journey. I mean, you know, my rookie year through, you know, the Arena Football League and the United Football League, where I made my switch to fullback, and then, you know, 2 years in Cincinnati, and then finally here for the past, you know, 2.5, going on 3 years. It's been a process, and I've just tried to really, really pick up every little nuance of position and really trying to be a sponge in the offensive room and, you know, just trying to learn plays more conceptually rather than just, you know, what the fullback's got to do on this play. And that's kind of been, you know, helpful in me expanding my role, becoming more versatile and more valuable for this offense.
You're somebody who will flex out at times, and you will run routes not only as a pass catcher, but somebody who clears out space for your teammates. You're someone who will stay in at times and help provide run support. In that particular role for you, how valuable do you have to become for this offense? You know, we talk about the five guys from tackle to tackle, but yourself, the who man, is a tight end who often supports those offensive linemen, even the backs who have to come up and pass protect. The value of those roles, I mean, is there any way to quantify it?
Really, I mean, we're just trying to go out there and do our job, you know, wherever the coaches, you know, put us, and then, you know, what our job is to do on that play is what we're going to do to our best ability to try to help the team, you know, be successful and win games, man.
And you, when you talk about the conceptual aspect, learning the offense, as a former defensive player, in a strange way, did that help you in some respects? Because you spend your whole career up to the switch to offense trying to diagnose scheming, to try to diagnose formations in offensive football, and here you are now making the conversion. In some way, did it give you kind of an interesting insight?
You know, I think it did, looking back. I think there was, you know, my 4 years at Brown, you know, trying to always figure out what the offense was doing. And I used to try to take pride in that, especially practice. I try to, like, figure out the play before it even happened. And now kind of being on the other side, I think it helps me see what the defense is trying to do to us and also, and also physically knowing what linebackers are, you know, trying to do, whether they're trying to spill me or you know, set the edge or whatever. So it's kind of, it really has helped me, you know, having that experience on defense.
James, you talked about your long journey to this point. Who suggested it to you the first time? Hey, you ought to think about becoming a fullback.
I think it was just, you know, kind of a mutual thing between my agent and I when I was coming out of college. And because I was a smaller, you know, kind of one step too slow to play DN in the league, and I knew that. So I was just trying to really, you know, market myself as a guy who would do anything. And, I mean, it kind of, it helped me get my position. It helped me, you know, kind of get my foot into the door.
Jay Gruden was your coach with the Florida Tuskers of the United Football League. How instrumental was he in you becoming a Cincinnati Bengal, at least on the practice squad for the Bengals?
Yeah, well, a lot of guys, people don't know this, but I actually went to Cincinnati before him.
Is that right?
Yeah, because after the UFL ended, it was still like week 11 in the NFL. So I went right to Cincinnati right for the last like 5 weeks of 2010. And then in that offseason, they signed Jay Gruden to be their offensive coordinator. So, I mean, I kind of got in there before him, but it was definitely a big help having, you know, that familiar face, familiar offensive terminology and all that stuff when I got into, you know, a full training camp in Cincinnati. It was definitely helpful.
In that experience, a lot of people might not realize there are a lot of guys with substantial NFL time who are playing in the UFL. In fact, Jermaine Wiggins,
yeah,
the former Patriot tight end, so instrumental in the Snow Bowl win, was one of your teammates for Florida. Did that give you the confidence, too? You're preparing and practicing with these guys and playing against them, guys who'd been in the league for some time?
Absolutely. That was one of the most valuable things of playing in that league. Not only did I get the, you know, 9 games of film that I played, but also every one of my teammates, except for myself and my roommate, who was a tight end, they were all ex-NFL guys. They had played at least 1 year in the NFL, so it was really helpful for me to get in there, kind of see what it takes to be a professional football player, you know, see how they prepare, but at a, you know, a little bit lesser of a level than the NFL. So it was a nice stepping stone, especially, you know, switching my position to fullback. It was incredibly valuable.
And when you land on a practice squad, how do you describe that experience? Because we know that everything in the NFL is transient. Nothing is guaranteed, but especially when you're a practice squad guy, you're here today, gone tomorrow possibly.
Yeah, I mean, I always just tried to, you know, when I was on the practice squad, I always just tried to prepare as if I was going to play on Sunday. And then the only thing that's different is you're just not going out there suiting up on Sundays. You know, you may be on the sideline or, you know, and just watching a game. But, you know, there's weeks in, you know, just going to work and, you know, grinding it out and just trying to prepare like I was going to play on Sunday really, really did help and really did, you know, build myself as a player.
There is talk of, we know the practice squads have been expanded this year, of course, in the NFL, and there's a developmental league that is in the works after the UFL disbanded or folded. Do you, as a current player in the National Football League, do you support, I mean, that idea that there should be developmental opportunities for guys? Because there's so many guys like yourself in this league who don't latch on to a team the first, second, or even third opportunities in many cases. It takes a lot of time for guys to land on an NFL roster and then to establish themselves in the league as players.
Yeah, I think it's definitely valuable to have a developmental league. It's just tough, you know, because the NFL is the cream of the crop, and that's where everyone wants to go. And but I mean, it can't hurt to get out there and you know, if you know you can't quite make it in the NFL the first or second or third time, you know, just to go back and kind of get some film, get some, you know, your feet under you a little bit in the developmental league. And so I definitely support it. But yeah, I mean, you can never give up on a dream. You know, that's kind of what I always looked at it as coming out of college. You know, I had my degree, but I knew I always wanted to play professional football. So if I didn't at least try, at least give it my best, I'd always regret it. So I just kind of, you know, went against what, you know, people may have thought was the smart decision at the choice or at the time. But, you know, I had to do it. I had to, you know, see out my dream.
Aside from the dream, there had to be something inside of you or someone who was in your ear, someone you trusted, who had the same faith, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I think my family, you know, even though they kind of were a little skeptical, you know, I think they always kept the faith along with me and my friends, and, you know, obviously my agent, you know, he was very helpful in everything. So, yeah, and I got to give all the credit to, you know, my family, my friends for kind of, you know, giving me the extra push I may have needed at certain times and just, you know, keeping the faith in me.
James Devlin, our guest, last year against the Houston Texans, a memorable touchdown run, and you talk about not getting into the league maybe the first, second, or third time. You didn't get into the end zone, at least the first or second time, but you kept driving those legs and you got in. Is it too much of a broadcaster's stretch to say, in a way, that that particular play was kind of like a metaphor for your career, the determination that you showed on that particular run?
Yeah, I've heard that, you know, kind of being compared, you know, to my career. And it was one of those plays. It's a very special moment, you know, to score your first touchdown in the NFL. And, you know, it was kind of cool the way it all, you know, progressed in that play. Seemed like it took forever. And then I watched it on film and it was a couple seconds, but yeah, it was a fun play. It's something that I'm very proud of. And, when I have kids one day, I'll, you know, hopefully be able to pop that in and show them what dad did, you know?
And when you talk to your kids about the guys you played with, I would imagine Tom Brady's going to be high on that list as your quarterback. And,
oh, yeah.
And when Tom Brady says you're the best fullback in the league, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, that's that's something to be proud of again. It's a very nice thing to be said about you from a very, you know, good player. I mean, he's one of the best, and when you're getting that kind of praise, it's great. But I try not to drink the Kool-Aid, as they say. I didn't read the whole article. I did see the headline, which was very nice, and I appreciate Tom for his opinion. And I just got to go out there and prove him right, you know, this year.
Well, I think one of the other things that he said that your offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels concurred with is the toughness that you bring to this offense. Is that a conscious thing on your part, or is it just simply a matter of the substance with which you play?
I think it's just, you know, that's kind of my role, and I've accepted it, and I've always kind of tried to bring, you know, toughness to my game. You know, whether it was at Brown as a defensive end, you know, just kind of leading with my head, going in there and giving it all I got, and you know, that's kind of helped me, you know, get into this league, and it's kind of been my MO. I think I absolutely love being being a tough guy, being known as a tough guy, and I'm just gonna, you know, try to continue to play that way.
James, at the top, you talked about Kansas City, tough team defensively, especially tough environment, one of the loudest in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Do we on the outside make too much of that, the crowd noise, especially as an offense is trying to come together and develop some consistency?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely there, and it's definitely a loud place, and we're going to have to be prepared for that. But, you know, I think once you're out there and once you're kind of in the moment, you know, you almost, you know, sound out the noise. And it's gonna be loud, especially there on a Monday night, and you know, people are gonna be excited, and you know, we'll be excited too, and I am very excited to, you know, play my first game at Arrowhead, and you know, excited to just, you know, get it going.
Patriots play on primetime a lot, but how special is Monday night football?
You know, it's definitely a little bit different playing on Monday night. You know. Everybody in the world almost is watching you, so it's, you know, a little bit of added pressure there, but it's an exciting time, man. I mean, Monday night is just a little bit different from, you know, Sunday at 1 or even a Sunday at 8:30. It's just a little bit different of an atmosphere, and you know, I like that added excitement, you know.
At the same time, before I let you go, you play a 1 o'clock game. You don't have to wait around all day. What's it like in the hours that lead up to kickoff when it's an 8:30 kick? And you've watched the games on Sunday, perhaps, and you've gone through all your preparation, but now you're waiting for a kickoff on Monday night.
Yeah, I think, one of the main things I try to do is just keep myself relaxed, because, you know, if I wake up and I immediately start thinking about the game, thinking about what I got to do, it's just butterflies start going crazy in my stomach. You know, I'll be sitting up and just being nervous all day. I just try to, you know, relax, get my mind off of it for a little bit, but then obviously, you know, come go time, you know, you got to turn it on and got to be prepared for, you know, that opening kickoff at 8:30.
James, there might have been a time, as you said, when some might have questioned your decision to stay with football as an engineering major from Brown, but it was the right choice in retrospect. Congratulations on getting to this point, and all the best to you.
Thank you very much.
Monday in particular. Thank you.
Appreciate that.
James Devlin with us. We'll continue with more of the show right after this on Patriots.com.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Welcome back to the Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com radio.
Tom takes the step, throwing to the near side, catch is made by Vereen, and he's in for a Patriots touchdown!
Have a hot Patriots take? Call Bob on the Ace Ticket hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, here's your host, Bob Soucy.
And we welcome you back. Our thanks to Patriots fullback James Devlin with us on our last segment. And now we welcome in a gentleman who's been covering the NFL for a long time. Used to read him in the Sporting News long before the internet days. And, of course, still commentates on the NFL and writes about the NFL, including a weekly column in Patriots Football Weekly, Howard Balzer. And you can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Howard, appreciate the time. How are you today?
Hey, Bob, I'm doing really, really good, and I just wanted to add to that little mention there about how long I've been covering the league. Not only pre-internet days, how about pre-computer days? I don't know if anybody believes that that was actually the case, that we actually wrote stories on typewriters. How about that? That seems like ancient history.
Wow, wow. You're not going to tell me that you watch Sammy Baugh or Otto Graham play.
I haven't been around quite that long, but it's been a nice run, certainly.
Well, Howard, you've been around long enough to see a lot of great football runs by teams. And you've seen the Patriots, of course, rise to the dynasty level in the early 2000s. We've seen the sustained success of this team in the AFC in particular, even through the last several years, of course. But this season, the Patriots are 2-1, and there's cause for concern in these parts. What's the outsiders, the national observers' point of view right now? How do you see this particular team, where it is, based on what you've seen of the Patriots the first 3 weeks of the year?
Well, you know, it's so early, and I've been asked a lot in the last couple of weeks, well, who do I think is the best team in the NFL right now? And I said, I have no idea, and I don't know that anybody really does, because just the way it is in the NFL now, with shorter off seasons, shorter OTAs, training camps where you can't even have two-a-days, I think it takes even a little longer for teams kind of to get their footing and for any of us really to figure out what they are. And I'll tell you, if for the Patriots fans with concern, I mean, think back to the first few games last year where there were some real close calls and things were looking a little shaky. But from what I've seen of the Patriots, obviously, is they usually are a team that that gets better as the year goes on. In fact, it's funny, because I was just talking to someone the other day, during that week when the Patriots traded Logan Mankins, and there was a lot of obvious reaction to that. And it recalled for me the week when they released Lawyer Malloy. And I remember Tom Jackson going on ESPN saying that Bill Belichick had lost his locker room. And, of course, they then got blown out by the Bills in game one. We're 2-2, and I don't think they lost another game the rest of that regular season. So I'm not predicting that for this year because things are so close in the NFL. But like I said, they're a team that usually gets better as the year goes on. I hate to call it parity, but the competitiveness in the NFL is so close that this sustained excellence that they've had, there's no secret to why that has been the case. And so, you know, normally they'll right themselves, they'll find their identity, and they'll finish strong. And so, to me, they're still in the hunt in the AFC. I don't see a lot of teams certainly running out and hiding in that conference. And so I think things will work out. They're not quite what they were in the years when they won the Super Bowl, but they're still a darn good football team. And that to me is the way to look at it and analyze it.
Well, the team that is the reigning AFC champion, the Denver Broncos, lost a tight one, of course, in overtime after that rally led by Peyton Manning in Seattle. Your impressions of the Broncos? John Elway went out in the offseason, wanted to instill toughness, certainly acquired some defensive parts helping toward that end. Is that defense legit in your mind, and are the Broncos better this stage of 2014 than they were 2013?
I would say you would think that they should be, you know, slightly better on defense, like you pointed out, and yet then they have that game in Seattle where they staged the great finish to tie the game, and then the defense can't stop Seattle that goes right down the field for a touchdown in overtime. But, you know, they're still a good team. I think the defense, you know, again, when it comes together, there are a lot of new parts there, and that's, you know, that's the thing in the NFL these days with the way rosters change. And, you know, to add to what I was mentioning earlier about teams coming together as teams, when there's so many changes and so many player adjustments and things that happen, it can take a little time for teams to come together and be units that work together in tandem. And I think in time the Broncos, you know, will get better on defense. They weren't horrible last year. They were still pretty good. They look to be better. And you know, they're one of the teams you definitely have to look at as one that is going to be, you know, in the hunt at the end of the year. Like you mentioned, they lose to Seattle. The game the week before against Kansas City was a tough one, and it ended up being a close game. And so I think they're going to have I think they're probably going to have more close games this year than they did last season. For whatever reason it is, like I said, I think that so many of their opponents kind of maybe didn't even know what to expect last year, and they just couldn't handle it. I think teams are going to be better prepared for the Broncos this year, and I think they're going to be in maybe some more close games than they were last season.
Our guest is a longtime NFL reporter, Howard Balzer of the Sports Exchange and others, including Patriots Football Weekly. Howard, Cincinnati is the team that the Patriots will play after Kansas City, and look at the Bengals coming off a bye week. Of course, Cincinnati made the financial commitment this offseason to Andy Dalton as the quarterback. He certainly has had a great start to his career in the regular season in terms of the success of the Bengals getting to the playoffs, but we know about the postseason track record for Andy Dalton. Do you believe in the Bengals and Dalton in particular that this is a team that this year can take that next step, if not another two or three steps?
That's the big question, and we won't really know, obviously, until they do it. They've gotten off to a very nice start. I wondered a little bit about them because they had changed both their offensive and defensive coordinators, and so you wonder how everybody's going to adjust to new coaches. So far, at least, it's looked very good, and there's a lot of talent on that football team. But your question about the postseason is one of those that you just don't know. I mean, they should be talented enough to win in the postseason, but we also know that that's when the best football is played in this league. You're playing against the best teams each week if you happen to advance, and that, you know, that's what makes it difficult. I mean, look at a team like San Diego that had a great run there, and they're still a good football team, but they had a great run, but they'd always lose to the Patriots or lose to the Colts or whoever. They just lost to slightly better teams all those years and never could make the big run in the postseason. Doesn't mean they're a failure or a bad football team, but that's how competitive and how good the competition is in the postseason. And that's what Cincinnati has faced. And they have to find a way, like you said, to take that next step. But to take that next step, that means, you know, beating teams that have had a lot of experience in the postseason and finding a way to win those games. And certainly Dalton is a part of it, but he's not the only one. You know, everyone kind of always blames it all on the quarterback when there's a lot of other things that affect who wins and loses games, especially in the postseason. So, like I said, I think they're very capable, but until we see them do it, everyone's going to be doubters.
How about the four teams who went to the postseason a year ago and now sit with two losses when you talk about Green Bay, New Orleans, San Francisco, and Indianapolis? Of those four, who do you think will turn things around and certainly be on its way to where we expect it to be? And what team should be most concerned at this point out of that group?
That's a real good question, because you look at all those teams and you see the talent that is there. You see some of the struggles, like you said, that they've had early. I thought that San Francisco might have some issues this year. With the players they've lost on defense, not only to free agency, but obviously to injury and then suspension with Alden Smith. You know, they seem to be maybe so far going away a little bit from their bread and butter, which is running the football and then throwing it. But they've been doing a lot of spread stuff. So I wonder if they're going to adjust there. New Orleans has always been a team that when they're able to run the football is when they've done their best work. You know, they're always going to throw it around the yard, and Drew Brees is going to throw for 5,000 yards, but then they come up short. The years they haven't come up short, when they won the Super Bowl and the year they got to the NFC Championship game, is when they were able to run the ball to balance that passing game. So I think they've got to be able to develop that. Getting Mark Ingram hurt early, I think, affected that. They're off to a slow start, but of course their first two games were on the road, and that's a big thing in this league is who you play, when you play at home and road. So I think they're going to right themselves. Green Bay has some issues on the offensive line that they have to get answered, and that's been their problem. And some of the years when they've been pretty darn good with Aaron Rodgers, when the line had some struggles, they were still good, but really not good enough to make that postseason run. But I still think that they should be the favorite to win that division. So, you know, you've got a lot of teams that you're wondering if they're going to get it together. And the first one you mentioned was?
The Green Bay, New Orleans, San Francisco, and Indianapolis.
Indianapolis. And, you know, the Colts still can't run the ball. That's a big part of what's happened with them. You know, they don't have Robert Mathis now for the season, so they're a team that is capable of giving up points. And so they're still probably a team to beat in that division, because it's not overall a very good division. The question is whether they're really playoff ready, and I'm not so sure that they're made for the long haul in the playoffs yet, but they're getting closer.
Howard, I know as well, having grown up watching the early days of ESPN's draft coverage, that you were somebody that probably was among the first, if not the first, draft analysts, at least with a national stage. You've seen young quarterbacks come and go in this league a countless number of times, but of the young guys right now, we're going to see Bridgewater make his first start, of course, for Minnesota this weekend. We've seen Derek Carr make three starts, and in Carr's case against the Patriots, although the Raiders couldn't score a touchdown, I thought he was very impressive on Sunday. What did you think of him coming out of college, and how does a guy like Carr, or even the Patriots' Jimmy Garoppolo, who are in the backup job this year, come from a collegiate offense that's no huddle, no verbiage, and grasps the NFL so quickly, at least quickly enough to be a starter in this league on day one?
Yeah, it is very difficult. There's no question about it. And it's not only grasping the verbiage, but then it's repeating it. And as the quarterback, knowing where everybody is and is supposed to be and the protections and all those things that go into being a quarterback in this league. So I think that you can learn it by memory, but getting out there in the field and doing it, it'll take some time. Now, granted, when you get out there in games, you kind of have a reduced game plan to a degree. And, the coaches go with the game plan with the plays that, they believe will work in that game. And so it's not like you're working with an entire playbook. And then you can concentrate on that in a week. And as long as you put in the time, and that's really the biggest thing for quarterbacks is, you know the old saying, first one in the building in the morning and last to leave in the evening. You put in that time and work and study it, then you can have some success. You're going to have some struggles. You're going to have some bad decisions. You're going to have some issues as a rookie. There's no question about it. But the work ethic is the biggest thing that these guys have to have if they're going to have any kind of success early. And so I think Carr will be even more successful when they're able to run the ball in Oakland. And that's the toughest thing. Normally, the rookies that come in and play well at quarterback are on teams that run it. They don't get into too many of those bad situations, second and third and long a lot, when the other team's going to bring the house. But the Raiders haven't been running the ball very well. They've got to get better than that. But certainly Carr has been pretty impressive. They haven't thrown it a lot, which is a big thing. So they're not asking him to do too much. Mm-hmm. And they're bringing him along like that. But see what he's been able to do early, and you say this guy really has a good future ahead of him.
And finally, with Howard Balzer of the Sports Exchange, and again, a columnist that we get a chance to read in Patriots Football Weekly every week, you're on the other side of the state in St. Louis, but Kansas City, of course, home of Arrowhead Stadium, is also home to one of the most challenging environments for any visiting team. What should the Patriots expect on Monday night, playing in prime time against the Chiefs at Arrowhead?
Well, certainly, like you said, it'll be noisy and red. And you know that. And, the Chiefs, there's a team that kind of, they got off to a slow start, losing the first two, and they were able to win in Miami to get that first win. And, they're without Jamal Charles, they were able to win last week with Niall Davis doing a nice job. And they finally had a game. Alex Smith didn't have any turnovers, and he was somewhat out of character in those first two games because he just doesn't make mistakes. So what you want to do for the Patriots is try to force Alex Smith into mistakes. And then moving the football, their defense has had some injuries as well. And so that's going to be the key, I think, for the Patriots. They've got to get that running game going. That'll help the passing game, which, still has some questions at wide receiver, but need to get the running game going, which they, haven't been able to do consistently. And so I think that'll be the real key against the Chiefs. And the other thing from that defensive standpoint is the Chiefs are really muddled right now on the offensive line. And they had their right tackle, Donald Stevenson, was suspended. Then they moved their guard, Jeff Allen, over to that spot, and he lost for the season with an injury. So they really got some question marks on that offensive line, which, of course, the Patriots do too. But that could be the difference, which defensive line is able to take advantage of the other team's offensive line and exert their will in this game. So I think it should be a good one. I think overall it's always tough to go into Kansas City and win. I think the Patriots are capable, but like I said, they've got to win that war, on those lines. And right now I think that's still coming together, at least on the offensive line, for the Patriots.
Howard, appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Anytime. Enjoyed it. Take care.
Okay. Howard Balzer with us. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. A longtime NFL reporter, and you can read him as well in Patriots Football Weekly, as we said. He also writes for the Sports Exchange, and as well, you can find a lot of links to his stuff on howardbalzer.lockerdome.com. We'll continue with more of the show. Jackie Britton from Patriots.com, Patriots Today, Patriots Press Pass, Patriots, etc. will be with us right after this on our Bob Soucy Show, week number 4 edition here on the Patriots.com radio network.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved, with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
It's time now for a call to the bullpen.
I just, like, can't read.
The Kraft Sports Productions bullpen.
I'm drunk on a plane.
Time now to welcome in Patriots team reporter Jackie Britton to the Bob Soucy Show.
LOL.
I
Oh, I'm here.
And Jackie Britton indeed is in studio.
Yeah.
Thank you so much once again for that unparalleled introduction, Kevin
right.
Collins.
Jeez, doesn't get any better than that. Thank you. Bob, for having me again. Thank you for having me back.
I butchered that, so I'm going to do it again.
No, actually, Kevin, you butchered that. Thank you very much. So anyway, this is fun. Big week here.
Big week. Monday Night Football in Kansas City. A lot to talk about with regards to that game and, of course, the state of the Patriots. I know Andy's been waiting for over 20 minutes online would like to talk a little bit about the Pats. Andy, what's on your mind? How are you today? Andy, you still there?
Yeah. There you go.
You're on with Jackie and Bob. How are you today?
Oh, yeah. Can you hear me?
Hear you. We can hear you just fine now. Thank you.
Hey, I don't know. I never get on your show, so I apologize, Bob.
No apology necessary. What's your question? What are you thinking about with regards to the Pats?
Well, you know, everybody was talking in the OTAs that, you know, defense was looking great. Everything with offense is coming together, even with a new offensive coach. Big shoes to fill. And now it just seems like they're really big because the Logan Mankins trade. I keep on saying this to everybody. I don't think Cannon is the right fit at left guard. I'd like to see him play more at right. You know, at Stork might even be an answer at left guard, you know, for the time being. I have no idea. But maybe the Patriots should think about going after a legitimate starting left guard that they don't have to put a lot of money into. I don't know if that's going to be answered. I know that Brady's frustrated. He shouldn't be getting hit as much as he is. The guy should be staying real tight.
He got banged up pretty good last week.
Yeah. Well, Andy, I think you know you raised some questions that I think a lot of us have been asking with regards to the Pats and what they do with personnel and as well addressing some of the other issues with regards to scheme or technique. And Jackie, you know, Brian Stork came into the game to play center at about the 11-minute mark or so in the fourth quarter the other night. And Marcus Cannon is a guy who, as Andy alluded to, hasn't had the kind of experience at guard that he certainly has had at tackle. Last year spelled Sebastian Vollmer the last part of the season, really the last half of the regular season and the postseason at right tackle. So there's a lot to work through there with the new offensive line coach Dave DeGuglielmo and those personnel pieces, including the guys who've been here for some time, the two tackles, Vollmer and Nate Solders. So it's going to be interesting to see what combination they come out with against Kansas City on Monday night.
It's a constant storyline, I feel like, every week, is what the personnel will be on the offensive line. And it's certainly a concern. You know, who knows? I mean, we really don't have enough to evaluate Stork, I don't think, really, yet. I mean, there's not enough there to really kind of decide if he, you know, helps or doesn't help the line, I don't really think.
Well, I think the one question now becomes, are you better with Stork at center and Connolly at guard? Or Rendell at center and Connolly at guard than Jordan Debbie.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think that's been primarily the line of thought. And, you know, and again, in Debbie's case, in fairness to him, you know, this is a guy who has come in off a practice squad situation and played well enough in the preseason to put himself in the coach's consideration for the opportunity. And he's not alone. I mean, this, again, is an offensive line that's been struggling. It's an offensive unit that in a lot of different ways and at every position has had some issues to resolve.
And it doesn't get any easier for them this week. I mean, they've really, we think they had a tough test last week. They've really got a lot on their hands when they go to Kansas City Monday night, for sure.
No question about it. Yeah. You were in the locker room today and heard some of the Patriot players talk about what they're going to face in the Kansas City Chiefs, the team that beat the Miami Dolphins soundly last Sunday and got a great performance from Nile Davis.
Which is more than the Patriots can say. I mean, you know, that's quite an accomplishment, I think. So, I mean, Dante Hightower was in there and he was talking about Alex Smith and his ability to run around a little bit. As Coach Belichick noted earlier today, he is the second leading rushing QB in the league right now. So, I think there's certainly a lot to be said for that. But I think this is going to be another game where it's really going to come down to the defense. You know, and what's interesting is that for as good of a defense that Kansas City has, and they have a great defense, they haven't forced any turnovers this year. They're the bottom, I mean, very last in the league in forcing turnovers, but the Patriots obviously on the top end of that spectrum. So I think that that's what it's going to come down to. I'm nervous about the offense in Kansas City, Arrowhead, communication, loudness, against this defense. I really am. But I think that it's going to come down to turnovers, and I think the Patriots defense might have to kind of again bail them out a little
bit. Well, it's a really interesting point, too, because Kansas City has had 5 giveaways and no takeaways, as Jackie said. Now, a year ago when the Chiefs turned their fortunes around, they had gone 2-14 prior to Andy Reid's arrival. Last year, in year number one under Reid, they go to the playoffs, they start 9-0.
Yeah.
They win double figures in games, and they do it with a turnover differential of plus 18. They had a 42 turnover swing between 2012-2013 when it comes to turnover differential. So that's a team that last year often won because it was getting takeaways.
Yeah.
And this year, as you said, hasn't been able to produce a single one.
Right. So, and Andy Reid, I think, obviously has been huge for this team. He's kind of been the mastermind, I think, behind turning the Chiefs around, which I don't think anyone would really argue with that. But Hightower was good today, but it's gonna, I don't know, there's a lot of questions on offense that make me really nervous. Like, I, you know, as far as a deep threat for the Patriots on offense goes, I mean, they don't really have one, do they? And if they do, like, who will emerge as that guy for them Monday night? That's kind of one of the questions I have.
Step one before you start thinking about the deep passing game is to provide the adequate pass protection
to take your
shots downfield.
Yeah.
And the Patriots have to go up against a defensive line with 2 very good rushers in Tamba Ali, yeah, Justin Houston. Now,
I like saying Tamba Ali. That's a fun name to say.
It's a great name to say, yes. And hopefully we won't have to say it too much on Monday night, though. Chiefs, as well, they're banged up on both sides of the ball. We heard Howard Bolzer talk about the offensive line. In addition to the injury problems, they lost 3 offensive linemen from a year ago to free agency. Their linebacking core a bit beat up. Eric Berry's been out for them. Interestingly, the last time these teams met, Jamaal Charles was a question mark for Kansas City because of injury on offense, and Berry was an absentee on defense. And here we go again. Those two guys haven't been able to play for the Chiefs, and Eddie Reed expects them back to practice at least on a part-time basis this week.
Right.
The Chiefs won't begin practicing until tomorrow, but nonetheless, what kind of respect do the Patriots have for the Chiefs' offense, even without Jamaal Charles, because Nile Davis ran for 130-plus yards, and Alex Smith threw 3 touchdown passes.
Right. There's been really no issue there. And that's another thing Hightower was talking about. He's like, you know, you look at them, and you just see a lot of speed, and I think that's going to be, that sums it up. You know, taking care of that, of Davis, is going to be huge for them, but Brady was actually kind of funny today in the press conference asked about Chandler Jones and his, like, wingspan. Would he appreciate having him play offense? And he was like, yeah, you know what? I wouldn't mind having a Chandler Jones as a wide receiver. He's kind of lanky. So, wouldn't be surprised if Chandler did get his hands on the ball on defense again. You know, of course, Vince Wilfork is capable
Tom also mentioned Vince.
Yeah, he
was a possible pass catcher, considering the late interception he had the other day.
Kind of unbelievable. Like, all the momentum that they've been able to build on defense and kind of keep rolling through has been pretty remarkable. But I don't know. And I think that they could be pretty good at rattling Alex Smith. I mean, he is really good at managing the games. Coach Belichick talked about that earlier. But I think it's going to be all defense pretty much in this game for the Patriots.
You excited about it in a Monday night game? Of course, we weren't too thrilled with the way the last one ended last year in Charlotte, but nonetheless, it was a great atmosphere.
Right.
Great atmosphere, great opportunity to play in prime time.
Yeah, I am excited about Monday night game. That'll be fun. I think that will be a first for me going on the road Monday night game. I was a Sunday night game last year. But Monday night game, that'll be fun Tuesday morning, won't it? That'll be a lot of fun Tuesday morning.
It will be if the Patriots win.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get a sense, too, James Devlin was on just a little while ago, and not only from James, but the players who spoke in the locker room today, the players recognize it's a great opportunity because everybody, all of your peers around the league are watching you on Monday night. It's not just the fans across the country. It's your brethren in the NFL. All the fellow players in the league are watching your team play.
As Chandler Jones said, everybody and their mama is watching. So that sums it up pretty much. Everybody and their mama is watching. But I think it's gonna be a good game. But I'm nervous. I think the Patriots will win, but not by much. I think it'll be a field goal kind of a situation.
Again, Jackie Britton from Patriots.com with us. And Jackie, you were at a couple of events early in the week outside of football. What What did you have a chance to observe and experience for the Pats away from the field the last couple of days?
So yesterday was the playground build, which is a really big deal every year where United Healthcare gets to, you know, partners up with the Patriots and Kaboom, and they go build a playground for, you know, inner city schools. And Darrell Rivas was a part of that, so it was kind of his first thing as a Patriot, his first thing in the community as a Patriot. So I got a chance to sit down with him and talk about that, which was pretty cool. So we'll have that up on Patriots.com and also on Patriots All Access this Friday.
What about the Patriots with a short week next week? Of course, it's going to be very, very difficult to turn things around. You got the Cincinnati Bengals coming in on a Sunday night, so the first primetime game at home, but also a short week. How difficult does that make things around here for you, the staff? I mean, we know the players have less time to prepare, but it really is a condensed week for everybody who's involved in covering the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to use the cliche day by day, but in all honesty, that's kind of what it comes down to, you know, whatever events are that day. I mean, it is different, though, because, you know, Community Tuesdays are the, you know, the thing around here, so but that obviously can change with the way the schedule goes. So it's kind of just a fly by the seat of your pants, go where I'm supposed to go, and, you know, kind of figure it out as we go along. So that truly, in all honesty, day by day, week by week.
And Kansas City is first and foremost. And you've already talked about the environment in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium. Certainly it's been a talking point the last several days with the Patriots offensive line in particular and the offensive unit trying to find its way. But the players really downplayed that today in the locker room, didn't they?
Yeah, they didn't really have a whole lot to say about that. And one thing I do think the Patriots will have the advantage on is going up against their offensive line. You know, I mean, Kansas City's allowed 11 sacks, which is the second most right now in the NFL. And I think that with Chandler Jones and Rob Ninkovich, especially with Jones going up against Eric Fisher, I think Chandler wins that battle, in all honesty. So I think that, again, I just keep going back to the defense, but they've been kind of downplaying the Monday night, you know, loud noise, you know, kind of acting like that's not a big deal. I think that's going to be huge.
And at the same time, of course, we know that they have to prepare for it.
I think it's going to be a really big deal.
Absolutely. Because it certainly was a question that Tom addressed, Tom Brady did after the Dolphins game, because Cameron Wake, for example, from Miami seemed to get a head start so often, anticipating the snap count. And it is difficult when you go on the road and in terms of communication. But nonetheless, there are different ways the teams try to prepare for. And the Patriots have done that, again, by blaring the rock music or other musical selections, other genres from the practice field. You could hear that if you were a Patriot place today shopping at Trader Joe's or
hopefully you did
the Christmas
hear it,
shop next door.
I would like to think that they are working on that. But, I mean, as much as you can do that, there's really no replicating it. There really isn't, you know? I mean, to be in that environment, it's going to be tough. I think that people, not the players, but I think that will be something that is not necessarily underrated, but I think that it will kind of, people will overlook that is, you know, well, they've played in loud stadiums before and blah, blah, blah. I think that could really have a lot to do with it. Just with the way the offense has been executing the past few weeks. You know, I think the Raiders game kind of told us a lot. Like, I think communication not only between Brady and his receivers is going to be challenged, but certainly among the offensive line, you know? And that's going to dictate how well you run the ball, and if they get off to a fast start, the momentum can totally, you know, change. So, I think it's going to be a huge deal, and that's why I think that the defense will have a better game than the offense will.
Jackie Britton with us. She's my partner, of course, on Patriots.com at Patriots Today and other vehicles, reporting on the Patriots every day through Patriots.com. And my partner on radio broadcasts on the Patriots Radio Network with flagship station 98.5 is the one and only Scott Zolak. And Scott takes time to join us. And Zoe, how are you today?
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. I've got a special guest, another broadcast partner in studio.
You call that a special guest?
I don't know what
Jackie,
we call
how
you.
How are you?
I'm good.
You,
I'm good.
Good.
All right.
Ready to go to Kansas City?
Yeah, man. I'm pumped. Get some steak.
All right.
So what about the Patriots? Do you expect them to be ready to go to Kansas City? I mean, we've spent so much time the last few days talking about what they didn't do right against the Oakland Raiders, and now they go into this environment at Arrowhead Stadium. Tough place to play against a team with an imposing pass rush, at least a couple of guys who can get to the quarterback. What are your expectations moving forward for the Pats on Monday night?
I think the football team will be ready to go, and I think that really is the big thing, because it depends on the detail.
Come back to us.
Obviously, Zoe's in a bad cell for the moment, but
you got me.
Yeah, I got you now. Yeah, you were saying that the attention to detail. You do expect this team to be ready.
I'm very sorry about the reception. I can't afford to live in a high rent district. We basically have two tin cans and a string holding things together.
Well, I know the cell tower is a long way from your compound, especially when you're inside those walls and the gated community.
Yeah, for a designed reason. I really expect them to be ready to go. It's attention to detail, especially the voice, that everybody's going to be on the same page. And you know, I got done taping all access today with Bill, and he's really proud of the way the team works, and I think if they're working, it means hey, they're responding, they're answering the coach. They got some mistakes to fix. There's no doubts about that, but I think you know we always get consumed because we love the team, and it's always a week to week thing, and we hang on every single play. And how do you're only as good as your last game and all that? But you know, in the big picture, it was a good, great weekend for them in the AFC East. Everybody else lost, they won. They're tied first at 2-1. And I keep telling myself, go back to last year at this time. Go back after that Jet game. Now. It was different. They were 2-0 to start the year. But, you know, Bob, you remember that Jet game.
Sure.
Away from the guy. That was one of the ugliest games I've ever seen them play. The turning thing for me is they, you know, front, you know, where they're rushing 3 and 4. And they're bringing blitzes. And when you play the really good elite teams, and that's no disrespect to the Raiders, but I'm like the quarterback, you know, week one, you know, he's upset. He's upset after 37 to win after, you know, a kind of a subpar outing in Minnesota, that he's thinking big picture. He's thinking AFC championship. You know, he's thinking all that stuff. What do we need to do to advance to get over that hump? And I think they can fix problems up front. It's just a matter of picking the right five guys to go. I like the way the defense is playing. I really do. You know, when you give a 9 spot on the board and a 7 the week before, and you know, you can allow the offense to kind of figure things out. And I remember the days when we were scoring 35, 37 points, and the defense couldn't figure things out. So it's complimentary football to me.
So do you think that when it comes to the defensive game plan, that Bill Belichick has been somewhat conservative by choice this early in the season? And, you know, a lot of people, and I only ask that because in listening to the station that you're on every day, 98.5 the Sports Hub, I think a lot of people want you know, exotic schemes, and they want the Patriots to be ultra-aggressive. And yet, yep. I kind of think that it always seems to be with this particular team an evolution process. It's really in stages the way we see the Patriots take shape on both sides of the ball.
By the way, that station, 2 more times in 5 years for sports station of the year. That going on over there. Appreciation of Patriots football, other than Bob Soucy on Patriots.com radio. But I don't think Bill Belichick gives one iota or could care less what anybody outside thinks. I think he is so week to week that, you know, we're going to see weeks where Dobson sits, where Tompkins sits. Maybe it's going to be somebody more popular. Maybe it's going to be a defensive back that, hey, we're going to have to carry some more receivers this week, so we're going to have to throw it. They really structure things game to game. And All Bill cares about is, at the end of the day, that we get more points than the other team. He doesn't care about style points. He doesn't care about, you know, Darrell Revis, you know, shutting a guy down completely. And I know people talking about Revis, 6 targets, 5 catches. You know, we called that game, Bob. I mean, there was a flow in that game where I felt Derek Carr was in rhythm, 12-16. But then you go look at it, oh, wait, it's 68 yards total. But he had a couple key throws, key drives alive.
Yeah.
They're not giving up the big play. That's the big thing right now.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think, you know, in the moment, it seemed like it was a different story. Even the score, you know, there was a sense at different times in that game that the score was different than it was.
Yeah.
And when you talk about, Zoe, the offensive line and the personnel and settling on the five guys that you want to move forward with, in your mind, I mean, how much of an impact could a rookie like Brian Stork make if he's one of those guys, or should he be one of those guys?
I think he can make one, but if he's tenacious about it, and if he comes in with an attitude, with a knocker, you know what? You know, they need that guy up front. I really don't think they need up front. They need it in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's where Logan was. That's where Dan Copen was. That's, you know, I think Colin is kind of that quiet giant where he's going to get after you, but you're not going to hear a lot of it. You know, everybody would gripe about Logan having that 15-yarder, that stupid penalty. Well, it's kind of a tone setter. Every once in a while, you need somebody to flip away. You know, you see Staley do it out in San Francisco this week, crying about, you know, defensive calls. You need a guy with an edge up front. And if Stork's got it, stick him in there and let's roll. Let's go play ball. They need to pick 5 and go with it. I think it is Ryan Wendell, you know, being down for a part of these first 3 games is really, hey, not only are we down Logan, we're down another starter from last year. So only, you know, you got three back with two empty spots in the middle, and I'm not sure Nate really trusts who's playing next to him because it's somebody different every week. So pick a guy, let's roll. And not do it because it's the past game with the quarterback for sure.
With Scott Zolak, of course, as we chat about the game coming up for the Patriots on Monday night. What's Arrowhead Stadium like?
It's a cool stadium. It's a really cool venue. I would call it a bucket list.
Especially on a Monday night, I would think. And again, Zoe in a bad cell.
Zoe's fine.
Okay,
fine.
There you go. So you were saying you call it a bucket list stadium.
Yeah, bucket list stadium. I mean, if you're a football fan, and people have been asking me all year, where should we go? I said, well, you got to agree with me. You got to see Lambeau. Brady versus Rodgers in Green Bay is going to be epic. It's going to be one of the great ones. People like San Diego for the travel. I'm like, yeah, it's all right. But you tell them, you know, Arrowhead Stadium, too, from a noise perspective, a Monday night environment, I think they're really good fans out there. They're going to be loud, but they're not obnoxious. They're not like Buffalo up there, Bills Mafia, you know, all those slobs. Sorry, that place sucks. You know, it's Arrowhead Stadium. I think that, yeah. The St. Louis baseball fan, you know, they'll show up. They're well-educated in the game. They'll get after it, but they'll respect the opponent. And I think Arrowhead's that way. They're going to make it noisy for you. They're going to make it hard to function, but at the end of the day, they'll stand up and clap. It's a good place to play, a lot of great barbecue. It is. It's one of the, what do you call it, altars of the football gods. Have you seen Lamar Hunt's suite yet, Bob?
No, I have not. I'm looking forward. Hopefully they'll let me near it.
Yeah, you got to check Barstool Sports. I think they've had a kind of a listing on it where it's about five pictures. It's got to be one of the best suites I've ever seen of an owner have. And I'm not taking a shot at Mr. Kraft, but, boy, they got it going on. It's like three levels. It's phenomenal.
Well, if anybody deserves it in ownership, it would be Lamar Hunt, of course, who helped to found the AFL and later came up with the name for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's Kansas City. I mean, I don't like the red. All that stuff. I'm not a big fan of logos and all that, but I give them credit because they haven't changed much over the years. I really like seeing Andy Reid in that big red shirt. Makes me laugh. Looks like a walrus with a golf shirt on.
How about when he's dancing in the locker room after a win like he did Sunday?
Hey, the more you can do to make yourself a player's coach, Terry Francona made a living doing that. So, hey, anything to make yourself embellish yourself with the players.
And it's two of the best in the business going at it Monday night, trying to match wits, Andy Reid and Bill Belichick.
It's gonna be fun because you want to see how much of the Eagles offense there, you know, and who's gonna replicate. We're not gonna see much of, you know, the Nick Foles type throws, but I think Alex Smith is a pretty good game manager. He'll take care of the football and he'll make plays with his legs, which makes him dangerous.
Mm-hmm. A lot of screens.
Not sure. It depends what he has at his disposal. You know, if I'll tell you what, this Nal Davis guy, you know, 235 pounds. Guys are a rock. He'll run you over. He's north and south. Two different type of backs. You know, if they have him available with Charles, it's a good 1-2 punch for him. I just don't know how much Paul Charles is going to be ready to go in this game.
Yeah, it's really been a shame for him. This is a guy that got hurt last year early in that playoff game, and they still had that 38-10 lead over Indianapolis and couldn't hold
it. Right. That's a tough one on him. And that's the thing they get looming over the head. We'll see if they can come back from that.
All right. Well, Zoe, looking forward to it again.
All right, guys.
Have a hearty appetite, because I know you will, but nonetheless, we're going to a big steakhouse, a great steakhouse in Kansas City on Sunday night before the Monday game, so a good pregame meal, and it'll be a lot of fun. Very exciting atmosphere.
Sounds great. Jack, you see me seated on the bus. You know, make sure Scalvino brings it down your neck. I'll sit behind you.
Hey, Zoe, thanks a lot. Thanks
all
as
right,
always.
Guys.
All right, Scott Zolak, the former Patriot quarterback, my partner on the radio broadcasts, again with our flagship station, 98.5 of the Sports Hub. And Monday night we'll be on the air before the Patriots match up against the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Kansas City Chiefs at 1-2 at home coming off their win over the Miami Dolphins, beating Miami in South Florida 34-15. Nile Davis, the aforementioned running back, spelling Jamaal Charles, 132 yards on 30 carries, including a touchdown. Alex Smith, the quarterback who formerly played for the San Francisco 49ers, now in his second year with Kansas City, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. The running back Jamaal Charles out with a high ankle sprain. Don't know his status yet for this weekend. On the flip side, for the Chiefs, Tamba Ali, source of 75 and a half career sacks. The Chiefs as a whole got to the quarterback Ryan Tannehill of Miami 4 times on Sunday. And they've got a defensive coordinator in Bob Sutton, who had a long career coaching in college at West Point as both an assistant had a head coach in Rustin Lee, a guy who presided over a wishbone or an option program, and then went into the NFL and for several coaches was an assistant from the New York Jets with Herm Edwards, Eric Mangini, Rex Ryan, and brings an aggressive mentality to defense to Kansas City. We may see the Chiefs, even with those very good rushers from their front four, nonetheless bring a lot of blitzes. Tom Brady talked about the Chiefs personnel today, very impressed with them, and he did mention the possibility of inside blitzes in particular from Kansas City. Now, we mentioned, of course, that the Patriots will take the Chiefs on in a Monday night setting. Nothing new for either of these teams. For the Patriots, this will be, I believe, the 46th time they play in prime time on a Monday night, and it will be the fourth time they meet the Kansas City Chiefs in a Monday evening affair. The last time they met, in fact, it was a Monday night football contest, and the Patriots won here in Foxborough. And one of the stars of that game, Rob Gronkowski, who had two touchdown receptions, including what remains his career-long catch of 52 yards. And wouldn't we love to see Gronk on the field Monday night having a similar impact? And today, one of the things that he did say is that he feels that he's a lot closer to getting things rolling, as he said in the locker room in meeting with the reporters. Feels very good right now. No limitations for him. And certainly it's a possibility that Rob Gronkowski will be on the field even more than he has been through the first 3 weeks of the season Monday night when the Patriots take on the Kansas City Chiefs. And for Tom Brady and company, that will be a welcome presence, no doubt, against Kansas City. We're going to chat momentarily with Mitch Holtis, who's the voice of the Chiefs and has been for the last 21 years. Mitch Holtis, last year, of course, called the Chiefs' return to the postseason under Andy Reid in his first year as the head coach of Kansas City. Andy Reid, a guy who in 14 seasons led the Philadelphia Eagles repeatedly to the postseason, 10-10 all-time record in the postseason as a head coach, and five times got to the NFC Championship, and of course squared off with Bill Belichick, his Eagles, and the Patriots in the Super Bowl, New England prevailing over Donovan McNabb and company. But Andy Reid, a very well-respected head coach, and again, last year changing the culture in Kansas City and bringing the Chiefs back to the postseason, albeit, though, with a great start and a rather sluggish finish, 9-0 at the beginning, and then the Chiefs lost five of their last seven before blowing that big lead in the postseason. Came into this year with substantial changes, again, on the offensive line, but nonetheless with a lot of the parts that led them to the playoffs a year ago carrying over, including the aforementioned Jamaal Charles and Alex Smith, who got a recent contract extension, a deal for him that certainly secures him in that spot for the Kansas City Chiefs, at least in the near future. The Chiefs as well, with a defense that, again, applies a lot of pressure from its front seven, nonetheless a dangerous team in particular at home as they try to get things right at 1-2. And again, with Mitch Holtis, the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, soon to join us, we're going to talk about that team in greater detail and get his perspective. And Mitch is standing by again, 21 years as the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. And a lot of people ask me about the legacy that I inherited in covering the Patriots and following Gil Santos. Here's someone who inherited a legacy established by the likes of Charlie Jones, Merle Harmon, Ray Scott, Wayne Larrivee, Kevin Harlan, all among the best in the business. And anyone who's listened to Mitch knows that with his trademark touchdown Kansas City call, he's right up there as well. Mitch, nice to talk to you. Look forward to meeting you on Monday, but thanks so much for the time today.
Well, congratulations on you being the voice of the Patriots. So I'm looking forward to seeing you, and it'll be a raucous Monday night here in the Midlands.
Well, speaking of that, I've been forewarned, and little has prepared me, I guess, from what I've been told for Arrowhead Stadium, especially in prime time. What can one expect as a newcomer to Arrowhead and the loud environment there?
Well, actually, it'd be good for you if you can build in some time in your day. I don't know how it is, believe me, but if you get a chance just to take, once the team drops you off, if you had a little time just to take a spin or look around the parking lot a little bit, it's very unique. It's not really replicated in the National Football League by virtue of its logistics. It really becomes its own city. Now, I know a lot of places tailgate, including in Foxborough, I've seen it, but this is unique. I mean, this is like having the taste of Boston or Providence food tasting world convention all in one spot. It's a festival. It's a all-day deal, and Monday Night Football brings out the best in all of it. They'll have all day to get primed for that kickoff.
Well, those of us in this business in many cases got into it because of the free food in press boxes, but I'm looking forward to the food outside the stadium in this case.
You will you'll get everything you want to sample. And they'll barbecue anything. You'll have everything from seafood to sushi. I guess sushi, seafood, but you'll have everything on the food chain you'll be able to get.
Well, we're looking forward to that, and of course, it's a matchup of two teams who last met in a Monday night game, and unfortunately for the Chiefs in that case, I guess Jamal Charles and Eric Berry were question marks going in because of injuries, and that's the case as well this week. What's the status of this team health-wise and with its depth in week four?
Well, frankly, it's been brutal up to this point. This team has taken a lot of water. In fact, to give a marine analogy, it was listing at 30 degrees port until the win over Miami on Sunday, but during this Miami game, they were missing eight starters. Now, some of those guys will not come back at all. Derek Johnson, on the cusp of being the leading tackler in franchise history, tore his Achilles, as did Mike DeVito, who you guys will remember played for the Jets and was a really good player here for us. They're both out for the season. Also an offensive lineman, Jeff Allen. The most notable guys that have the potential to come back, there are three. You just mentioned two of them. Jamal Charles, he still has the highest average per carry in the history of the National Football League, and that's a pretty good sample size dating back to the start of his career in 08. Eric Berry, you mentioned, a three-time Pro Bowler, and then the other one is DeAnthony Thomas, the rookie out of Oregon, who was spectacular for the Ducks. It was great for us in the preseason, but injured a hamstring on the Thursday before our opener against Tennessee and has not played since. And they're hoping with the extra day that he'll be able to play, but it's something we're monitoring throughout the week.
Well, without Jamal Charles, the Chiefs went to South Florida and did something the Patriots could not accomplish in Week 1. They beat the Dolphins, and not only did so, but did so soundly. Nile Davis, 130-plus yards rushing. Joe McKnight, a factor as well, catching the ball out of the backfield. First of all, Davis in particular. I mean, this is a guy we saw have a chance in the postseason last year against Indianapolis and played well when Charles went out, and we got to see him again at a greater length on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. Different running style than Jamal Charles? Do they change the offense at all, or is this guy just as productive by doing it the same way?
No, he's a different style runner. He's a downhill guy. He's a 227-pound. He runs a 4.37. When he was coming out of Arkansas, he was injured his senior year for the most part. But if you, or his junior year, I should say, if you go back to his sophomore year, he tore the SEC up. He really is a Eddie Lacy kind of runner. If people have watched the Packers and the Alabama national title teams, that's the way he runs. He does have some skill, though, catching the football, and he can do it in space, because this team, if DeAnthony Thomas is on the field, has a legitimate 4x100, 100-meter relay group, because they've got some just incredible speed. But Jamal Charles, who has sprinters, Olympic sprinter speed, DeAnthony Thomas, who is not far behind, Nile Davis is not going to run the anchor leg, but he's going to be right there and running the two or three because he has that kind of unusual speed.
And they've got a big old slow former lineman who calls plays for them as their head coach, who of course did such a great job for so long in Philadelphia, and Andy Reid as a play caller. I think among those that Bill Belichick respects the most, based on what Bill has said in the days leading up to the contest. But beyond that, just in terms of the difference he's meant to that organization, whether it's strategically or simply changing the culture, how do you describe the impact he's made?
Phenomenal. I wish I had an adjective big enough. And that's no pun intended with him. In fact, he's lost some weight, but, he's done a 180. This is like, just putting oxygen into your lungs. We were not in a very good spot. 2-14 in 08, we tried to redo it. 2-14 in 2012. And in December of that year, a player, shot himself after murdering his girlfriend, who just happened to be Jamal Charles' wife's cousin. And it's just an unimaginable tragedy. And the team had completely hit rock bottom. That 2-14 season did not include a win over the AFC. And so that's the first time in history that it happened, in the history of the franchise dating back to 1960 when they were the Dallas Texans in the AFL. All right, quick story. So now it is December the 31st, 2012, getting ready to flip the calendar 2013, and Andy Reid gets fired. So do seven other coaches in the National Football League. Well, it becomes the Oklahoma land rush to get to Andy, because of the eight teams that fired coaches on that Monday, including us, there was a rush to get to Andy. Well, seven of the eight wanted Andy. The only one that didn't were the Eagles, and they just fired him. All right? So in a span of 36 to 48 to 72 hours, they get Andy convinced to come. Well, Andy is and I'll agree with Coach Belichick. He's a phenomenal coach, a great schemer and play caller, very good schemer. People think he's old school, but he does a lot of new school stuff. If you sit down and talk with Bill, he's got some unusual ways to block and to set up plays that look old school but are new school. But he's also a CEO. is transform the organization into one now that it's very participatory, open. Andy's very secure in who he is as a person and as a leader, and that has permeated throughout the entire organization. And all it took now was just lighting the pilot light. Because when you see this, when you get here, you'll know it. But, I mean, it's near as 80,000 people going crazy. I've always said the Chiefs should be the should use the Packers as their prototype because of market size, fan base, et cetera, et cetera. And the Chiefs are finally doing that. Andy really cut his teeth in the NFL with Mike Holmgren and that Packer staff of the 90s. And then you've also got John Dorsey as a general manager, and he was Ron Wolf and Ted Thompson's one of his main guys in Green Bay for years.
And John Dorsey, an Annapolis man. I grew up in Annapolis, Maryland, if I'm not mistaken. And having
he
covered
loved Southern Maryland, he loved him. He talks, and he was a great athlete there.
And I was going to say, having covered Navy for as long as I did, 16 years following the midshipmen, I got to know Bob Sutton's teams pretty well early on in that tenure when he was the head coach at Army, and had tremendous respect for him. Really, it was a terrible decision by West Point to let him go, but it led to his long tenure with the Jets. And Andy Reid, in some respects, I guess, took a chance by giving a guy like Bob Sutton an opportunity as coordinator of his defense. And we saw the way he turned things around a year ago.
Well, okay, again, if Coach Belichick is talking about Andy as a caller schemer, Andy saw that same thing with Bob Sutton. I mean, Andy respected Bob and what he was like as a defensive coach, but also as a leader. Now, since you've been around Navy football, and I love what they've done with the midshipmen, Army's only beaten Navy once since they fired Bob Sutton in 1999. But Andy also saw the way he led. Now, I've talked with Bob a lot because Bob is not only a football coach, he is a leader of men. And if you coach at any of the academies, you're as part of much of the leadership culture as you are coaching football. And I'm not telling anything you don't need to know. But that kind of acumen is really something that complements Andy Reid. And so Bob has brought that, a very aggressive style, but a guy who has a very big impact on your entire organization because of his background and his skill set.
With Mitch Holta's voice of the Chiefs, now that aggressive style includes a lot of blitzing, I imagine, and at least having watched the team play last year in particular, he's a guy who's not afraid to leave his secondary and man-to-man and blitz. But against the Patriots, he's got an offensive line his defense is going up against that's had its issues, certainly try to protect Tom Brady. And you have two of the better pass rushers in the league in Tamba Ali and Justin Houston. What do you expect?
Well, there's also pressure coming from the defensive front that's vastly improved. The new Vince Wilfork in the AFC is a guy named Dontari Poe, and he has been disruptive in the middle. It's not only sacks. They have nine, but they've also had a ton of deflections. I know you've looked at the tape of going back to our game against Miami. They deflected 4 to 5 passes at the line of scrimmage or near the line of scrimmage, and it comes from different guys. Houston and Holly are the big sack guys. The D Ford, the number one draft pick, is a screaming Mimi coming off the edge. But they're bigs in the middle. Alan Bailey, Dontari Poe, Jay Howard has had to fill in. One of the magnificent seven, I call them. Seven guys were claimed off waivers on Labor Day in 2013. The Chiefs took their advantage of being the most brutal team in the league in 2012, had first waiver claim, and they did a second draft basically in that weekend. Jay Howard's part of that. So it's a good defensive front, then it goes beyond the sacks. Now, they're missing Derek Johnson. He's irreplaceable. They're missing Joe Mays, who they picked up in the offseason, unrestricted free agent from Houston and Denver prior to that. They're both out. So they've had to fill in with a former Patriot foe in Josh Maga at linebacker, former Jet, and also James Michael Johnson, another one of the Magnificent Seven. So they're struggling in the middle, although they've compensated for it, but everything around them, particularly the front five or six around those guys, are very good.
Mitch, what about the lack of turnovers forced? No takeaways thus far through three games for a team that last year really thrived on turning opponents over.
There's an off-Broadway play called Church Basement Ladies. Now, it's more popular in the Midwest than it is on the East Coast. But it has had wild acclaim, mainly because it's kind of like the Greek wedding movie about ladies in the basement of a church making potluck dinners and haggling over recipes. There was a very distinct recipe for this team last year in a 9-0 start. It was winning field position. Dave Tobe is a brilliant special teams coach. But it was also, they were second in the National Football League in giveaway takeaway, only to Seattle. But they were first in the NFL in takeaway points. They were influencing field position and taking the ball away and scoring off those turnovers. They have not done that at all. Very astute point on your part. They're the only team in the National Football League after 3 weeks that has not forced a turnover. And this team has got to have some of that, as all teams do. But they were close against Miami. It's coming. Not sure it'll come against Tom because he's so good at not turning it over. But they're going to get some turnovers and score off of it, and that's where the season can flip.
And, Mitch, we're 3 weeks in, and, you know, you should learn in this league, I guess, whether you've been in it 1 or 21, that it's a week-to-week league, and not to make rash judgments or to panic over a situation like with the Patriots where they failed to score again a touchdown after they took a 7-3 lead last week against Oakland and had to settle for field goals and survive by winning by 7 points. But you've been around this league a long, long time, and you see the Chiefs where they are. They have some issues to resolve at 1-2. You see the Patriots at 2-1 with some issues to resolve. At the stage that these two teams are at this point of 2014, are these teams that you believe, based on the talent that they have, the coaches who are leading them, are poised to be there in the end in the AFC in the postseason?
Possibly. I still think we're just in the process of defining things. The Chiefs, this is a gigantic game for the Chiefs on Monday night against the Pats. Probably bigger for the Chiefs than it is for the Pats. Tom Brady's not facing himself in his own division, and we're facing Peyton Manning. So for 15 years, your division has had to look at Tom and go, how are we going to beat this guy? And that's basically where we're at with Peyton Manning. So to get to 2-2 would be gigantic, because we have to remember taking Alex Smith back out to San Francisco for a big drama game on a short week on the West Coast. But to get back to 2-2 and get to even par essentially for this team after having a miserable game in week one against Tennessee would be profound. If that happens now with Andy's leadership again, I'm just going to tell you, Andy is a way better coach than I think he's been given credit for. If he would have won that Super Bowl against you guys instead of, you know, losing it narrowly, I think the perception of Andy Reid would be vastly different. Now they think he's good, but oh, I don't know if he can win the big one. Now, you know this probably. How many Super Bowl coaches who have been Super Bowl champions, I should say, have won Super Bowls at another location? The answer is zero. So let's just say Bill Belichick left there and went to coach the Jaguars. Okay. He would be the first in history if he won the Super Bowl title with the Jaguars. So who do you hire? You hire the guy that almost won the Super Bowl. And there's pages now in NFL history going down the line of, I mean, Dick Vermeil, Don Shula, we can just go down of Andy Reid. Historically, is the perfect guy to hire because he got close to the finish line. Andy Reid is still motivated. He is still wanting to win a world title. He's got the talent to do it as a person and as a leader. And this team is trending upward. Regardless of what happens the left in 2014, if you're looking for a stock to buy in the NFL, you can buy the Kansas City Chiefs, because we were the worst in the league in 2012, the bottom of the ocean. Mm-hmm. And now this team is trending upward with not only what Andy has done, but really an outstanding staff, maybe the best staff I've seen in my 21 years.
And quickly and finally, is Alex Smith indeed the guy who's going to lead them? They've made that commitment to him, at least for the short term.
Yeah, they have, and he's a better athlete and quarterback than people think. He was your game manager. Well, do this tonight. Just go find the video of his game against San Francisco and his rally against New Orleans in the playoffs. He's now 31 wins, 12 losses, and a tie in that realm of starts. And really, he's in the realm of wins, loss of Brady and Manning. He just didn't win that Super Bowl. And the reason is Kyle Williams fumbled two punts. If he gets to that Super Bowl and wins it, our thought process of Alex Smith is way different than it is today. He's capable of getting it done.
Mitch, looking forward to being out there. Look forward to meeting you in person. I can't thank you enough for your time today and your insights. Really great stuff.
Well, I shouldn't say go Army, but I'll say go Army. But when you get some time
I'm amazed at your knowledge of the Army-Navy rivalry. That's absolutely great.
I love Army-Navy, and I've talk about it all the time. But build in a little time. Just when the buses park, say, you know what, I'm going to go for a little bit of a walk and just look around. You'll be amazed.
Yeah, I can't wait. Can't wait. I've been to Kauffman Stadium once a long time ago, but really excited about going to Arrowhead.
Not the same. Totally different.
All right. Mitch Holt is with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Yes, sir.
Again, the longtime voice of the Kansas City Chiefs for 21 years. And as you can hear, this is a guy who has a command of his subject matter and great pipes as well. I'm very, very humbled by the last 15 minutes or so. But when the Patriots look at this game, of course, as we know, they've got a daunting task going into Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. And with the Monday night stage, it will be a raucous atmosphere, as Mitch told us. Looking forward to it, though. Should be very exciting and in a lot of respects. I think it'll be much like last year's game between the Patriots and the Carolina Panthers. For the Panthers, that seemed to be a game of validation for them as an ascendant team in the NFC South. And they beat the Patriots, of course, albeit in a controversial ending, but nonetheless in a thrilling game, and one would expect good football theater, if not great football theater, coming up this Monday. Of course, we enjoyed that this past Sunday in the end on that final stand by the Patriots defense against the Oakland Raiders, albeit it was a game that was far closer than most envision, but nonetheless, the Patriots were able to prevail in the end. Now, the Raiders took the opening lead after the Patriots went 3-and-out on their first possession. Oakland got a field goal from Sebastian Janikowski, who would provide all the scoring for the Raiders. In an interesting twist as well, all the scoring in that contest was produced by guys whose names ended with those syllables linked together, Owski.
Polish
Owski, absolutely. Well, you know, and I was working, as I said yesterday, with someone with a proud Pole from Western PA and Scott Zolak. So it was a game indeed when there was a lot of plenty of Polish power with Janikowski and Gostowski and Gronkowski on the field. And Rob Gronkowski and his Patriots, of course, would have to answer that field goal by Sebastian Janikowski. As we take a listen back to some of the highlights and sound bites during and after the Patriots win on Sunday over the Oakland Raiders.
One receiver left, trips to the right. Carr's looking that way, sets up a screen for Reese. He's hit immediately by Hightower. He'll wrestle him down for a loss inside the 45. Back to the 44. That's 9 yards in arrears for Oakland when throwing the screen against Dante Hightower.
That's a good read right there by Hightower.
Brady with a shotgun snap. Stands in, throws to the near side. Gronk has it, and he has a touchdown for the Patriots.
Too easy. Shane goes right up between the guard and the center. He breaks left. Everybody goes to Shane, and they drag Gronkowski in a little bit of a delay. From right to left, right across, wide open. Brady sticks it on him. He didn't miss him that time, Bob.
Just a little over route, and just got open on the linebacker, and Tom put a nice ball right there, and I just made the catch and got in. So good job by everyone as a unit, and we executed well.
This one will be spotted down left hash mark from the 11, and the kick is airborne to the uprights, and the kick is good. So the Patriots, instead of 7, settle for 3. Nonetheless, they go to halftime on top of Oakland by the 10-3 score on a 21-yard field goal for Steven Gostowski.
Yeah, this game comes down to three things: ball security, third down, and the red area. And, you know, we have to get better at the red area for sure.
Brady from the gun. Vereen joins him in the backfield. Tom has the snap. Tuck's coming on the rush, and Tuck gets to the quarterback. Justin Tuck with a sack of Tom Brady inside the 10.
We weren't happy with the way we performed against some really good players. They made some plays that we would not have wanted to give them up, but you got to give them credit. They play good ball.
47-yard field goal try by Janikowski from the near hash. Spot by King. Kick sailing toward the uprights. The kick is good. Janikowski has his third field goal of the day. Two field goals for Oakland here in the second half to draw within one. Trips to the wide side left for Tom Brady, has the snap, drops back, looks to his left, throws it for Edelman, a lob, and Julian leaps to make the grab, and he comes down inbounds at the 34-yard line. What an outstanding play by Edelman, going up behind Carlos Rogers.
Boy, amazing. I mean, Edelman gave enough room, allowed enough room between he and a defender for Brady to fade him to the sideline. And elevates, it goes up and gets the ball to his highest point.
Steven Gostowski's been summoned for another field goal attempt. This will be his third of the day, and this will be a 36-yard try from the near hash, left hash. Aiken to Allen on the snap on the spot, and the kick sailing to the uprights is good. So for the Patriots, once more, a field goal from Gostowski. For the Raiders, they're still within striking distance. It's still a one-score differential.
I thought we did a good job keeping them out of the end zone. You know, anytime you don't give up a touchdown in the game, it's pretty good, and you know they made some good drives, and I think it was big we were able to hold them to 3.
Carr trips to the right, quarterback drops back, pumps to the right, looks down the middle, throws to the middle, ball is batted around, picked off on the deflection, Vince Wilfork has it, and the Patriots are going to seal it. It's the third career interception for Vince Wilfork, his second against the Oakland Raiders.
That's a big guy that doesn't drop a lot of food over the years, so you got to think he's got great hands.
He kind of called it that he's going to get another one this year, so hopefully we slow him down or we pick up our play. We don't want him at the top of the leaderboard. I mean, he could have worked on his run after catch, but I mean, I think he's so smart, he knows situational football, so he just got down and let the offense come on and take a couple of knees.
Brady takes the final snap, drops back, and throws a rainbow to the far side. Exhale. The Patriots win it over Oakland, 16-9 here in Foxborough.
Every game's a do whatever it takes win, so happy we got a win. We know we got things we need to work on, things we could do better, but in this league, you don't know how the game's going to play out. You don't know how you're going to get the win, but you got to do whatever it takes to get a win on any given Sunday.
And well said by Devin McCourty, joined in that montage by Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman, and Nate Solder with the sound bites to go the highlights from the Patriots' win over the Oakland Raiders. And I felt the frustration, too, last week watching the game unfold, but you can't take anything for granted in any walk of life, but especially the NFL. Wins should not be taken for granted, and the Patriots are now 2-1. As Scott Zolak said a short while ago, too, in addition to their victory, you had everybody else in the AFC East falling, and now the Patriots go into week four against Kansas City on the road with an opportunity, of course, to address the issues offensively, as we've talked about, and get things right to get on a roll. Coming back home for Cincinnati a week from this Sunday night. As we heard in the end of that game with Vince Wilfork procuring the interception, of course, this is a Patriots defense that is capable of the takeaway, and the Patriots come into the game on Monday night as a key stat to think about with a +6 turnover differential, 8 takeaways tied for the league lead, and right there as well tied for first in turnover differential at +6, whereas Kansas City, in contrast, in stark contrast to where the Chiefs were a year ago, without a turnover forced thus far through three games at -5. Still, Andy Reid likes the defensive effort that his team put forth last Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. So, again, with our thoughts on Kansas City looking ahead, listen back to what Andy Reid had to say about the Chiefs in the wake of their win over the Miami Dolphins.
First of all, I think every win that you get in the National Football League is a good win. I thought our defense really stepped up, the leadership on the defense. And we've had a couple injuries there, but the Justin Houstons and Tomba Dunterry and Alan Bailey and Abdullah and then Sean Smith haven't been from there and knowing that environment. I thought really showed great leadership yesterday during the tough times when things could have gone either way. Our defense really, really stepped up and kind of ended those situations abruptly.
And again, that defense holding Miami to the 15 points, and for the Chiefs' offense, albeit with a short passing game predominantly in a run game that produced more than 130 yards from Niall Davis by his lonesome. Again, a team that has rushed the ball well its last two games, by the way, after struggling in week one this year against Tennessee. Alex Smith had a 3-touchdown passing performance against the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, I was really impressed with the entire team. We come out second half and fumble, you know, and I fumble and put ourselves in a hole. And I thought we responded. I mean, I thought defense responded all day. I thought offense responded. We put a long drive together, went down and scored. Defense there late got put in some tough situations, and I mean, just kept answering the call. You know, kept shutting them down. I mean, didn't matter how many times they were out there, they just got it done. And then O-line finishing it off. I thought those guys played great, played physical. They had a tough job today, and I thought really finished it.
And we choose those cuts because I think what Andy Reid said echoed what Devin McCourty said at the end of the montage. Again, every win in the NFL is a good win. And what Alex Smith talked about toward the end of that clip about the Kansas City Chiefs, much maligned offensive line, really struggling personnel-wise and with health issues nonetheless, finishing that game in a strong way against a good defensive front for the Miami Dolphins. And so for the Patriots, coming off a win that they certainly appreciate and will not take for granted against the Oakland Raiders, however they got it, now it's their opportunity to go into Kansas City and do to the Chiefs what the Chiefs did to the Miami Dolphins. Our thanks today to all of our guests, including James Devlin, Scott Zolak, Jackie Britton, Howard Balzer, and of course Mitch Holtis. And thanks to you for tuning in. And for our producer and engineer Kevin Collins, I'm Bob Soucy. We'll talk to you again next week, Wednesday, from 4 to 6 on Patriots.com. And Scott Zolak and I will talk to you on 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston, and the rest of our Patriots Radio Network Monday night when the Pats travel to Kansas City. So long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com radio.
Sets up with a throw to the right side, catch made by Edelman, turns to the end zone, and he runs it past the 5. He dives to the end zone! Touchdown! And the lead for the Patriots!
Patriots!
Bob will be back next Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. with the latest news and reaction from this week's game, as well as a preview of the Patriots' next opponent.
Hand off Ridley, runs it right. Ridley dives to the goal line. He's in again! Touchdown, Patriots!
Log on to Patriots.com anytime to find the latest Bob Soucy Show podcasts, as well as the very latest news and information on your favorite team.
Shotgun snap to Manning. Play fake. Throw to the near side. Ball picked off by Logan Ryan. Diving break on the ball.
He's got it.
As he stepped in front of Eric Decker.
He's got it.
Patriots take over.
This place is berserk.
We look forward to hearing from you on the next edition of the Bob Soucy Show.